back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And once again, it is time to continue with today's Q&A with Layla. It's part two of today's discussion. You can send questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and that'll get you an opportunity to have your question answered during one of our podcasts. You can call us during our program, of course. It's 888-302-3684, Saturdays from noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Time, wherever you are across the country. We can field your questions live on the air. Or if you prefer to record a question that we will field during our radio program, you can go to the homepage for drhoffman.com. The homepage for Intelligent Medicine is called drhoffman.com. And we will take that question and we will answer it on the air. That's a little black bar on the side of our homepage. If you click on that, it'll give you an opportunity to leave a question that we'll answer during our radio, our weekly radio program. So that covers all the ways you can get questions to us.
And thank you for all the questions. Keep them coming.
Okay. And then, you know, maybe we will design a new app. You know, we have Siri, we have Alexa, and maybe we'll design like a new app that we can sell from drhoffman.com. It's called Ask Layla. And you just like talking to the device and, you know, it'll land. But the technology is not, we haven't quite worked out the technology on that one yet.
Right.
But who knows?
Gosh. We have an email from Wendy. Wendy writes, "My husband has extreme cramps, Charlie horse, and spasms. He's 55, relatively healthy, does take blood pressure medication, which he started just 4 months ago. Not overweight, exercises regularly. He hydrates when he's active, so I don't feel like it's dehydration. Is there something we could do with diet or something he could take which will help? And what is the cause?"
Yeah. He has cramps, yeah?
Yes. Charlie horse, spasms.
Right.
Yeah. Well, started blood pressure medicine 4 months ago. Actually, Dr. Hoffman, my first question would be, what kind of blood pressure medicine? Because if it's a water pill, if it's a diuretic,
absolutely,
he could be low in magnesium.
Yep, potassium and magnesium, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And that could be the source of cramps.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, there's several, it's actually, cramps tend to be a mysterious phenomenon still. Even in sports medicine, it's not clear what causes cramps. It is thought to some extent that it may be due to dehydration. But I got to tell you, from my experience, I suffered from cramps when I did a triathlon this year. And it was the hottest day of the year. So when I did the run, I just reached a point where my thighs cramped. They just locked.
They just locked
and
up.
And I had to walk it off. But I was well hydrated. Okay, so it wasn't about hydration. Also, I thought that I'd handled my electrolytes pretty well because I was using a formula from Thorn, which was a great electrolyte formula, and I guzzled a lot of that on my bike ride. So I actually think that some of it has to do with just, you know, muscles in the red zone of, you know, when you
What about lactic acid buildup?
And lactic acid buildup. Now, and so what I noticed was, and I thought, well, gee, that's, you know, what's the matter with me? But many of the contestants in that race experienced, including, I was racing with a 38-year-old who is an Ironman contestant. He, you know, a family member who, you know, said, hey, you know, I'll do that race too. And he's just a terrific athlete, and he also suffered from cramps, and I think it was heat-related. Okay, that being said, there's actually some research that suggests that drinking pickle juice alleviates cramps.
Huh.
Why that is you know, really high concentration of sodium and certainly other minerals may alleviate the cramps, although that's probably not in itself a surefire remedy. I do think that there's something likely going on with this guy's mineral metabolism because of the blood pressure medication. I also think that the cramps have to do, to some extent, with lack of flexibility and, you know, proper stretching, you know, especially if you're experiencing calf cramps. A lot of people have very tight gastrocnemius muscles, and, you know, calf stretching can really help to alleviate that. So daily stretching is important. For a lot of people, they just, you know, lift weights and, you know, run and exert themselves, but they don't do proper stretching, which is something that I'm getting around to doing by inaugurating yoga later in life. So, you know, I think that all those ingredients may play a role.
You know, we've got a similar question, which I want to read to you now. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, lately I've been getting severe cramps in my calves and ankles, primarily during the evening in bed. I take a wide range of supplements, including a good mineral supplement and extra doses of magnesium. I'd be grateful to learn the causes. So calves and ankles.
It's a little different when you experience it at night, you know, in bed, because it may have to do with the position of the spine. During sleep, you may twist your spine, you may cut off nerve stimulation to your lower extremities, and that's not an uncommon cause of nighttime cramps. You know, it used to be suggested that people take quinine for nighttime cramps, but quinine is not legal over the counter anymore. You can, I guess, drink some quinine water, but there's not
tonic
much quinine
water.
In that.
I know a lot of doctors recommend tonic water. That's that's the tonic water of vodka and tonic minus the vodka.
Unfortunately, pretty laden with sugar, and
it
then
is.
You can get the and you can get the sugar-free tonic, but then it's artificially sweetened and it tastes abysmal. I've tried it. It's just oh my God,
it's awful. Aspartame. It's horrible. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, there is a homeopathic remedy, I think, by Highland that I think is still available. It's called leg cramps, and it contains a very small homeopathic dose of quinine. I think it's still available. It's called leg cramps.
That would be ideal.
Yeah, or cramp something. Highland, H-Y-L-A-N-D, for nighttime cramps. And then, you know,
tonic water.
And we also have to take a look. I mean, there are certain people who have sleep disorders, like something akin to restless leg syndrome. And that is also a condition that's, you know, it's more uncomfortable legs, not so much cramps, but it happens especially at night. And it's a sleep disorder. It actually, there is a nutritional component to that, because people who have restless leg syndrome, or RLS, they're often prescribed very powerful medications that are used for Parkinson's disease, because that enhances dopamine in the brain. But one of the ways to alleviate it is to get your iron checked. And if your iron levels are not even necessarily deficient, but borderline low, you want to increase your iron. And sometimes that helps.
Wow. Wow. Wonderful. Okay. So, thank you, Judy, and Wendy and Michael for your questions.
And what's interesting is here they both have cramps, but there might be completely different phenomena or completely different treatments for them.
Right.
You know.
So for Wendy's husband, who started blood pressure medicine, especially if it includes any HCTZ, hydrochlorothiazide, which is a diuretic, taking a good mineral supplement would be helpful, especially magnesium. Anybody who has high blood pressure, even when you're on a blood pressure medication, would benefit from taking magnesium taurate.
Absolutely.
At least 400 milligrams a day, at least.
Mm-hmm.
400 good. Milligrams a day. Very helpful. And that could help with the cramps as well, Wendy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
I wish I had a buck for every patient who we've just, you know, this is interesting. I was at a party the other night, and, you know, they introduce people around, and it's like, and unfortunately, I know so many people through my practice, or they, you know, it's a phenomenon of being well-known, is that more people know you than you know them, because I'm in the media and I see a lot of patients. So it's not uncommon that I meet someone and they have like this flash of recognition on their face, and I just have sort of a puzzled expression, like, where do I know you from? And this woman was smiling and really happy, because she was introduced to me, and she said, I know Dr. Hoffman very well. Okay, great. Well, I'm sorry, I don't recognize you. I was thinking to myself, uh-huh. And she said to the other people there, she says, because you saved my life with magnesium taurate. I was experiencing terrible cramps, and I don't know whether mm-hmm. I don't remember that she was a patient, but she may have just mm-hmm. listened to a radio program and heard me talk about it, and it was, she made a big difference
wonderful.
For her.
Yeah, huge. Wonderful. All right. Thank you for your questions. All right, let's see here. We've got an email from Paul. What is your opinion of taking mega doses of vitamin C on a daily basis? Beneficial or a protocol for enriched urine?
Well,
Paul, there's only so much vitamin C you can take that your body will absorb at least orally without turning your GI tract inside out. The upper tolerable limit per day for many people is 2,000 milligrams a day. Some people could take as much as 5,000 or 6,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially if you have a cold. So for whatever reason, bowel tolerance is actually a little better during a cold, because I think your body is really using the vitamin C. Mm-hmm. But I think a good dose would be at least 500 milligrams per day with each meal, breakfast, lunch,
right.
dinner.
Yeah, and this has to do a little bit with the physiology of vitamin C and its absorption. Studies show that you can't absorb much more than about 500 to 1,000 of vitamin C at one time.
Yeah.
And that very quickly it dissipates. So if you really want to maintain high levels of vitamin C in your body throughout the day, an ideal program might be to take 500 or so 4 times a day, distributed across the day. Now, this is actually one of the rationales for intravenous vitamin C, because when you bypass the gastrointestinal tract, you can load the body with much higher doses of vitamin C. And when you do so, you get a completely different effect of vitamin C. Vitamin C has anti-cancer effects. It has anti-infective capabilities. Mm-hmm. It's
wonderful for healing.
Yeah.
For collagen, for joints, for just, it's very, very important antioxidant.
And, Lila, we tend to, vitamin C is kind of old hat. We tend to think, vitamin C, it's kind of passe now. But recently, and I discussed this on my radio program this weekend, there was a study done in Sydney, Australia, of diabetic patients. And diabetic patients have a lot of trouble with wound healing, but they always attribute that to the diabetes, the high blood sugars and the poor circulation. But one enterprising doctor said, gee, I wonder what the vitamin C levels are on some of these patients who, eat a pretty abysmal diet. They're very sick. Their body's really challenged by high blood sugar, which depletes vitamin C. It actually turns out that diabetics need about 3 times as much vitamin C as normal people to just maintain their vitamin C.
It's interesting. Glucose and vitamin C compete.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's precisely what happens. Yes.
Interesting.
They compete for absorption. So what they found was that the levels of vitamin C in some of these patients with poor wound healing, by the way, scurvy, an ancient disease, we tend to think of, that was in the 17th century, but when they began giving British sailors dried limes, they used to call, that's why they call British sailors limeys, because Sir James Lind discovered in the 1700s that you could prevent scurvy by giving a ration of lime juice or dried limes to sailors. So they equipped every ship of the British fleet, of the British Navy, with a box of limes, and every sailor was instructed to take some lime every day, and it averted their scurvy. Well, anyway, what are the symptoms of scurvy? Poor wound healing, easy bruisability, periodontal gingivitis, bleeding gums, tooth loss, and of course, ultimately death, if it's serious enough. But these sailors subsisted on hardtack and dried salt meat. And there was no fresh vegetables
no
for
vitamin C.
weeks and months at a time. Yeah, no vitamin C.
Yeah.
But maybe this is actually the diet of some people, you know, that they don't eat any fruits and vegetables. In a diabetic, they have a much higher requirement for vitamin C. So they found that these diabetics had very low levels of vitamin C. In fact, they had scurvy.
Mm. Wow. So
which
scurvy's
could have easily been
kind of made a comeback. Yeah.
Scurvy's made, and maybe it's been there all along, and we have had sort of a false sense of security about, okay, yeah, we have plenty of vitamin C now nowadays.
Right. Interesting. Very, very interesting. So, Paul, that's the way to take the vitamin C. And, of course, the IV doses, you know, what's indicated for that would be for boosting immunity, particularly against cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no way you could take 25 to 75 grams of vitamin C, not milligrams, everyone, grams. So we're talking about 25,000 to 75,000 milligrams of vitamin C.
Yeah.
But you take that via intravenously.
Hey, it's a great laxative.
Yeah.
Forget about expensive urine. You were talking about expensive something else.
Right, right.
Okay.
Paul, thank you for your very thoughtful question.
Yep.
Okay. We've got an email from Larry. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I read various health newsletters and books, besides being an avid listener of the show. I would like your opinion on soy. I was watching one of these clickbait videos whose tagline was, which health food should you be avoiding? It turns out it's soy. I'm a big fan of tofu in my stir fry, and I sometimes use organic soy milk. Please give me the lowdown on soy. Should it be eliminated?
Mm-hmm.
I actually did an article about this recently in our newsletter about the advantages and disadvantages of soy. Soy, first of all, is a goitrogen. So anybody with hypothyroidism it would be in their best interest to greatly minimize their intake of any soy, edamame, tofu, soy milk, or eliminate it completely. And if you are a user of soy, the goitrogens are less if you use the fermented version in the form of, you know, miso, tempeh, something along those lines. Now, the jury, Dr. Hoffman, helped me out here, I think is still out in terms of benefits of soy phytoestrogens, especially in the setting of something like breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
There's
yeah.
a school of thought where some scientists will say, well, those additional phytoestrogens are just adding to the estrogenic burden in
mm-hmm.
a woman's body. But there's another school of scientists saying, well, those phytoestrogens are weaker and they're actually taking up the receptors
yep. mm-hmm.
with the weaker phytoestrogen, which is better than the endogenous estrogen, so it's better.
Right.
Again, the jury's kind of still out on this, but what do you say?
Well, you know, I got to say, I've been following this controversy almost since the beginning of my medical career, you know, in the 1980s, yeah. and it still hasn't been resolved. And it appears that studies suggest that populations that consume moderate amounts of soy for a lifetime are at lower risk for hormonal cancers. Okay,
yeah.
breast cancer,
yeah.
uterine cancer, prostate cancer. However, once you get a cancer, that's where I think the controversy begins, because it depends on the cancer. It depends on,
yeah.
you know, the hormone status of the cancer. Some cancers are inhibited by soy. Others may not be affected, and others may be accelerated, and it's not entirely clear. I guess what bugs me about soy these days is that the vast majority of it's GMO,
yes.
and also it is mostly available as a refined food, so it's kind of artificial in that sense. It's kind of taken out of the context of its original source, and so, you know, vegetarians who use, you know, who eat tofurkey or, you know, use texturized vegetable protein, you know, basically they're getting refined soy, and it's maybe
yes.
not that healthy. So, you know, I'm in a Japanese restaurant. I'll have edamame occasionally. And I don't feel that it's doing me grievous harm because it's at least it's the actual soy bean. But these days I'm not eating that much soy. You know, and I got to say that in my beginning of my career, I was a vegan. I was macrobiotic. I was promoting vegetarianism and veganism as a solution to a lot of problems. And, you know, I don't think I was any the worse for it, but after a time, I felt it was imbalanced to just eat, you know, have soy be the only major source of protein in my diet.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, so it's a little bit of what you like to say, Dr. Hoffman, different strokes for different folks in terms of whether soy belongs in their diet or not, depending on what else may be going on. So, there is some research that suggests that men taking soy, it may interfere with testosterone metabolism, which maybe then in the setting of prostate cancer, may be a good thing.
Maybe a good thing, yeah. And, you know, another concern is this. I do have a concern about, you know, kids who are intolerant to dairy and feeding very young children soy formula is a little worrisome because of the hormonal effects of the soy. It may actually have a shaping effect on, you know, early sexual development. And that's just, and it's unclear in what direction, but these are phytoestrogens that soy contains, and, you know, just exclusive reliance on soy-based formulas may have a developmental impact on children. So, and besides, they're incomplete. It's, you can't drink soy milk instead of you know, human breast milk or formula. It's just you've got to have some kind of fortified, balanced formula that, even if it's soy based, it's got to have certain additives to make it more like human breast milk. Because there actually has been some cases where macrobiotic parents, a little fanatical, have given kids vegetarian diets and soy milk, and the kids have developed terrible malnutrition.
Vegan diets are not indicated for babies and growing children. There are a lot of deficiencies. Even with our adult vegan clients, we have to watch iron levels, B12 levels, maybe to some degree vitamin A levels, not beta carotene. They're getting plenty of that from their plant-based diet, but actual vitamin A, things of that nature, possibly, you know, calcium maybe, but not so much. I think calcium they're okay with, but a lot of important nutrients, so.
Yeah, there have actually been cases where, you know, Child Protective Services had to step in because the parents were a little too fanatical about it.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. All right. Larry, thank you for your very thoughtful question.
And, Layla, you know, again, I'll say time flies when you're having fun. I really enjoy these sessions with you every week. And I wish we had more time, but as long as our audience seems to enjoy these sessions. And, you know, and I got to say, I'm very pleased with our statistics on these podcasts because more and more people are enjoying the podcasts. Typically the month of November is kind of a slow month because a lot of people are getting ready for the holidays and, you know, people are distracted by Thanksgiving, but we had a near record month. It was our second highest month ever, in the month of November, and our, podcast downloads just keep growing and growing. We had over 150,000, nearly 160,000 downloads during the month of November alone, which takes our total well above, I think, 3.1 or 3.2 million downloads over the course of this podcast of just 2.5 years. So very happy that people are listening.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, and thanks, too, for your contribution because you've been part of our portfolio of success because of your very popular podcast, usually posted on Fridays. And what's in store for listeners this week?
Oh, this week, let's see. I was talking lately about all about the nightshades and how they may be problematic and all the a little bit of history about it and what they may, the avoidance of nightshades may be beneficial for.
Great.
And then, yeah.
Important discussions. But, okay.
Oh, my gosh. It's a privilege to be doing this in your company, Dr. Hopman, first of all. And I'm just very gratified that we have so many listeners, and let's keep on keeping on.
We will keep on keeping on, absolutely.
Yeah.
Thanks to popular demand. All right. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thank you, Layla.
Thank you.